Good afternoon. My name is Julie, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the third quarter 2018 results of operations conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. If you are listening through the webcast and would like to ask a question, please dial into the conference call using the numbers listed on the webcast console. Thank you. Steve Height, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, and welcome everyone to the third quarter call. Statements that will be made today that are not historical facts and are forward-looking statements, as that term is defined in the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Such forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties, which would cause actual results to differ materially from estimated results. Such risks and uncertainties are detailed in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. No assurance can be given that the results in any forward-looking statement will be achieved, and actual results could be affected by one or more factors which could cause them to differ materially. For these statements, we claim the protection of the safe harbor for forward-looking statements contained in the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act. And now that we got the legal part out of the way, going on to our financial statements for the third quarter ending August 31, 2018, we had net sales of $4,222,906, and for the nine-month period, we had net sales of $12,440,242. We had an income before tax for the third quarter of a loss of $273,350, and for the nine-month period, $687,201. On the balance sheet, our receivables are still up slightly over year-end, but down as opposed to prior quarters. Inventory is up at the moment, but we expect inventory to decrease somewhat in the fourth quarter based on orders that we are shipping out. Other than that, the main effects, as we mentioned in the press release for the quarter, was the increased digital marketing advertising, which increased our advertising expense for the quarter. And you could see that the advertising expense was for the quarter was much higher than it was for 2017, and much higher as a percentage of sales as well. While we are obviously not happy about reporting the loss for the quarter, I just want to also put things in a little bit of perspective that if we look at numbers on a monthly basis, we had a loss in the month of June, and that loss in the month of June basically affected the entire quarter. But since then, the months of July, August, and the months of September going into the fourth quarter have all been profitable months for the company. On a cash flow basis, we showed a use of cash of $858,000 for the year to date as of August 31, and most of that was used to finance essentially the increase in inventory and a small amount for increase in receivables. Other than that, the only other significant increase in expense that we had that we noted was increase in shipping costs, and the company is working on that issue. I have no other comments on the quarter, so I will turn it over to our Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, Lance Funston.
I think your insights are helpful in terms of putting in perspective, but the reality, Doug, is that we had a loss. Probably didn't expect the loss because I think that we had assumed that Women's Marketing, the firm that is handling our digital media, we're spending that money intelligently and we get a bang for the buck. But that $385,000 did not generate any appreciable impact on our sales. And in fact, that would be almost a total of our negative impact. Your June numbers were how much for the losing June?
In June by itself was a loss before tax of $346,000.
Okay, so we mitigated some of that loss in the quarter as it ended up, but we didn't get out positively. Let me focus on some issues that are important to our, from a valuation standpoint. I think anybody who's listened to these calls knows I don't look a lot at interim performance as much as I look at the macro issues that affect enterprise value. We continue to look for acquisitions, and every time I look or bid or do due diligence, I keep coming back to a valuation number that is 3 to 3.2 times net sales. And we think we'll end the year at what level, Doug, would Steve, who has the number, who would we, how would we, what would we expect the year end net sales?
Net sales were on the only came out to what, Steve?
Yeah, just bringing that up now. We expect net our expectations of net sales for the year is about approximately $17 million.
Okay. So if you want to do the math, you do the math, but 3.2 seems to be the current multiple of that $17 million you should use for total enterprise value, and that's well above any stock price we'll have in the interim. But that gives me a lot of comfort, but it may not give you comfort. I feel like I made a good investment. I'm happy with it. But I do think that you have to look at the specifics of this year in terms of this transition, because I know in the last call, several of our investors were concerned about the transition to Advantage and whether or not that transition is having a positive or negative effect on our performance. And I think specifically, when you look at the top line, I'd say to date, we take a step back before we can take a step forward. I think these are principal transition issues. I asked Doug for the last board meeting, it was 2 weeks ago, help me understand what one-time negative events affected our top line so I could feel comfortable in telling you that I think we're still on track. He pointed out to me that $1.5 million of co-op contracts that we would typically have in place the first 6 months with accounts like Walgreens and Rite Aid were not put in effect because even though the contract called for Emerson, the prior distributor, to do so, they did not do it. So we had $1.5 million of co-op contracts that did not get put in place. It could easily have affected our sales and usually would provide sales lift. $624,000 in orders that we actually saw fall through the crack because Emerson did not provide a transition numbers that would be dated numbers that would connect our new distribution center with the order activity they were getting. So $624,000 orders, I would say, fell on the cutting room floor simply because they didn't get passed on. Now, do we recover any of that business? I would say most consumers when they can't find the product they want, they go to another product. So it's very, has a very negative effect on our business. And the third factor I came up with was just simply the net effect on sales of an order that was in dispute with our fragrance product that sold in Jeddah. And the distributor was contesting the quality of a shipment we sent him. And in fact, ultimately, to get the product moving, we had to take a $1.2 million hit, which is a combination of sales we would have made plus a reserve that she had to set up on the books to account for their unwillingness to pay that obligation. Add all that, of course, we had $450,000 worth of orders that we would typically forecast for Dollar General, a chain that we've done business with for 15 years. Emerson did not tell us, nor did Dollar General, that they had decided to not carry our product any longer. So that $450,000 did not happen. Unfortunately, that was after we'd already built some of that inventory. So we have the, at least each of you know what you'll get for Christmas. A.S. and Plus White from Dollar General. That total is $3.7 million. You put the total of $3.7 million into net sales, which is probably not fair, so you have to net it out, but put $3 million back in, and now instead of being at a forecast of 17, we're at 20, which is about where our plan was for the year, and we're on track. But so you ask yourself, why did we move today? We moved today because the inability to execute those commercial plans through co-op was consistently slipping through the crack at Emerson. Their inability to communicate with us in a real-time manner, losses like the Dollar General loss, were inadequate as well. So we couldn't respond in a timely manner and stay up with the accounts. So I think in the long run, we've made the right decision. In the short run, we're sure not getting a big bang for our buck. The senior executives came in to headquarters last week, spent some time talking about what they're going to do to fix that. And I think their ability to fix it is very much constrained by the review schedule that they have to live with on the majors. And I assume most of you who deal in consumer goods know that a Walmart that has to manage, let's say, 500,000 SKUs per department can only do so on a schedule that permits their buyers to review in an orderly manner. For that reason, they don't open the account for new products or increased activity until that review occurs. So we are now living with that reality. Walgreens, in fact, did have a review already, and we think they will make some favorable decisions regarding new products that we're developing for next year. If they do, though, remember, that will not be put into the shelf until next year. So in essence, what we have now is a year-end estimate of $20 million. Multiply that times 3.2, you get to maybe an all-in enterprise value of $66 million, which might be a hair above where the stock is today. I could go into a lot of plans in terms of what we have scheduled for next year, but I think the proof will be in the pudding. The buyers will be reviewing those new products in first and second quarter. We'll report those successes or failures as they occur. I think that we know where our softness is. It's in Plus White. Notwithstanding the Dollar General order cancellation, we know that the brand needs to be revitalized. We have two new products online to present to the buyers, and we think they're going to be successfully received. So you have to, that's a buyer's prerogative, and you have to wait and see what happens. On the internet side, needless to say, we have now learned that you can't pour too much into digital media day one, expect a response. So now the digital media campaign, any of you go to our sites, you'll find that we're upgrading the sites And a major sea change in that activity has been to basically walk before we run and do dip tests, small little tests of one test that's $700 a week, another test that's $200 a week. If it performs well, we continue. If it doesn't, we won't. And that's where we are. And if you have any questions, please let me address them. I'd be happy to do it. You must be doing a good job if there are no questions.
Julie, we'll take any questions now.
Your first question comes from Lenny Dunn with Mutual Trust Company. Lenny, your line is open.
Okay, good afternoon. Now, what exactly are you doing with internet marketing today? Have you hired anybody to market on the internet for you?
Lenny, we did hire internally a lady who is young enough to be considered a millennial. The problem is you got a 75-year-old CEO that's not very millennial. And I'm looking at two guys that don't qualify. Doug and Steve are not exactly in that category either. So we have a young lady that's doing the coordination now on these small tests. As far as a major digital initiative is concerned, the only plan is to test a new product that we have scheduled for the first quarter, which is a direct-to-consumer product for Plus Y. The reality is, Lenny, we discovered that a product that had been distributed widely in retail, and if you take each of our products and look, we're in 15,000 to 20,000 different retail locations. Those locations make it clear to the consumer that next time they're into Walmart or Rite Aid or Walgreens Drug, they'll stop and get the product. They are not likely, found, to necessarily jump on buying from an internet site simply because they see that ad on YouTube or Instagram or where we're running. Now, we've proved that out with a new product, an old product we just brought back called Pain Buster. Pain Buster is not in any retail location today. And our own and the site that we supply that product to for testing purposes, one site has it. And every time they get a case of the product, they sell out. They sell as fast as they can get it. And that's because you can't get the product anywhere else. So we're going to start trying something in the first quarter, which may or may not work. And I hate to even mention it because it might not work. But a product that we've developed for Plus White is clearly a consumer product. Very simple, polished device, like the dentist uses when you get your teeth cleaned in their office. It uses probing paste, operates with batteries. Our old care committee designed it. And it will be available in January on a direct-to-consumer campaign before we put it in retail, even though Walgreens has agreed they want to put it in their stores in the second quarter. The first quarter will give us a chance to say on television, this is a product that you need to go to the internet to buy on an exclusive basis. So it's almost like we're cursed with broad retail distribution when it comes to the internet. We actually have seen companies now that are originating on the internet, have never gone to retail, and have done real well. But we happen to have a very broad retail distribution, so that is where we are. It's a fact. I wasn't expecting great things from our digital group. We tried this outside group. They did not perform well, in my judgment. I will say the only bright light in that title would be Target, which I think has a much more millennial-based consumer base, and Target did get a significant lift in sales on Bikini Zone, which was the product that we chose to launch the digital campaign on. But thanks for your question, Lenny. You're always insightful.
Okay, and just another...
And the other, I will say one thing. I think, Lenny, I mentioned this to you the other day. We're negotiating with an internet-based retailer that we hope, which is the largest retailer in Amazon stable. And I think we're coming very close to getting the contract resolved, but that contract permits them to be our agent on Amazon, which we think will increase our presence there, but that's not something we'll, that's a situation where we think they can do a better job than we can because they do it every day. This particular company processes 1 million orders a month. And that gives them a lot of insight into what sells and what doesn't sell on Amazon. I'll firm that news up when we have a firm contract. I think we're close.
Okay. Yeah, that was part of one of the other two questions I had, is that we go a long time between news releases, and as shareholders, I mean, if you can, you know, have some kind of update out there maybe once a month, that would be very helpful to understand what we're doing so that we don't have to wait, you know, 3 months or 4 months in the next case before we find out what's going on.
Point well taken, but I do have a limitation on what I put in a press release. It has to be a fact. That is...
Oh, no, I understand that. We don't want just puffery, you know, having a nice time, you know. We want facts, but it seems like there should be at least roughly a fact a month that we can, you know, read about. And the other thing is...
We did install a new security system at the corporate headquarters. A golden lab that barks any time anybody comes to the door.
Okay.
If that's worthy. And by the way, I've got another news for you. We just found out that Honduras has a very substantial appetite for Plus White. Some people think the caravan has been organized by the Democrats to come see if they can break our border, loose, open border, and break into the U.S., but they're really coming up to try to buy Plus White. So get ready. That could be a real lift in sales.
Okay, and can you get your systems so that you have a little better control of knowing exactly what your sales are and the marketing efforts, what's paying off and what isn't paying off on a quicker basis?
Well, we're putting effort into that, Lenny. I'll tell you, this is a business that requires management of a lot of information. In fact, the luncheon meeting I just had with Doug and Steve was to focus them on developing a monthly report that would give me profitability by account, by SKU. We already have a report that generates sales by DMA for each month, showing the ad spend and showing that as a percentage of sales to make sure the ad spend is in line. And the only departure there was that we had that phenomenal leak in digital this past summer. But in terms of TV, I think we're on top of it. But I do hear you, and we're trying to get the Intact system, I believe, is one that will give us those insights on a more timely basis. I think that's a report we think we can produce.
Okay, and I'm certainly pleased to hear that we're profitable in September. And does October look like we're going to continue our profitability?
That's a long-range plan. You know, there's another week.
Okay, well, again, please keep us up to date on things other than the lab.
I'm sure,
lab, but we don't have to.
Happy with it.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from Gene Riley, private investor. Gene, your line is open.
Thank you. Now, you mentioned Actually, the first question would be finished goods inventory is like $3 million. If you were to break that down into, you know, the different categories, you know, what would be in there, that $3 million? Like how much of it is, you know, skincare versus oral versus analgesic?
I mean, we could break that. We could break down the numbers, but you know, in terms of by brand, where we're at. So we do have that available. I'm not so sure what, you know, relevance that has. I mean, I don't think that's information that we necessarily want to disclose to get into
granular
detail.
To give you a feel of what the inventory looks like, and this is Doug speaking, approximately about 300,000 of that inventory they carried through to the 3 million, it's high for us, was inventory we carried for a large international order that's set to ship this month. We also have in there approximately 800,000 of new product development that are items that are for sale next year, line extensions for all the brands. As the brands go, you can take the remaining amount of inventory and divide it up by whom carries, you know, the most sales, which is Plus White's our largest seller, then Bikini Zone, and then down to Sudden Change. So, the Plus White is number one. Porcelana is the third one in there. So that's how the inventory stuff. So skin, and then teeth whitening. So, it's, you know, those two skin items are probably, to your question, are probably split the inventory 50-50.
Right. Okay. That answers my question. Thanks.
Okay.
Now, the second question that I have is basically in the different categories. I know, like, analgesic sales of the trailing 12 months have been negligible, but you were talking about Pain Buster before. So is that going to be like something we're going to be seeing in the income statement next year, or is it like just starting to kick into gear now? Or, you know, because I'm just saying, because the last 12 months, it's not been there.
Well, let me make sure I clarify a point. To be clear, Pain Buster I just mentioned as an illustration of how much more efficient the internet can be if you have a product that's not available at retail. The sales are relatively de minimis. I would say they're, you know, maybe if we're lucky, 30,000-40,000 for the year. But we have,
right.
And we only made 50, we only invested 50,000, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now we have new SKUs available in the category. We're developing a stronger Pain Buster SKU. And I think Pain Buster is a product that could, in fact, have some traction at grocery level. It's being presented by Invage this next spring to grocery. But I think in general, you know, what you see is what we got. We're in the skin care, the oral care. A nominal presence is left in nail. I'd say that on the nail care side, we've got, is 100,000 maybe in inventory. We just got back into nail care. I think we have two or three accounts, Harman's being one of them, but it's not material. So it's the developmental category, Bikini Zone, Plus White, and skincare lines, Sudden Change, and Porcelana. We never run heavy on porcelain, but we are running a little heavy. Actually, that's not true. We've got that new SKU, offering a 24-hour SKU next year, and a porcelain hand cream, which are both new SKUs, and Doug has built an inventory for that. We build the inventory when we have an opportunity to capitalize on low production costs, given the gaps in a particular production source's schedule.
Mm.
So whether we produce it too early or too late, is all I know is if you sell it, you better have it available to ship. That'll kill that brand quicker than anything else. So I think, are we long on inventory? I'd say we're long on Sudden Change by about 250 because management made a very inept decision, that would be me, to try to launch more traditional skincare formulas like night creams and Revitalize, skin revitalization, et cetera, basic core skincare items under the Sudden Change trademark, when in fact the market has really identified that mark, Sudden Change, as a fast-acting, immediate solution to a wrinkle or under-eye sagging or whatever. So I've acknowledged that. I'm not going to go back there, but I do have some in the warehouse that we'll have to dispose of. I don't think it's something we need to write off until we present to retail.
Right.
I just don't think it's going to sell.
Now, what do you think about the Nutranil? Like 4 years ago, it was a big product for you, and you're just reintroducing it. I mean, are you looking forward to, are you hopeful that it's going to be a big product?
I think if we can figure out a way to differentiate our brand at the shelf, it'll do well. But we don't, you know, if you throw your nail polish product on one of those hundreds of pegs in drug and you don't have any kind of a display feature, I think you're going to not have a very, you're not going to have a good experience. We're dribbling the core products out. We only went back into five different SKUs, I believe, five. The core SKUs is sold the best, but I think the recovery of that trademark may be tough because the prior management did, in fact, venture off away from the core base units to health and wellness, which didn't do well, and before that was color and nail appeal and all that stuff. And the reality is, it's just the good core products, the nail hardeners, et cetera, are the products that have done well over time. Will it be a piece of business? Yes. Does it help form part of what I see as the enterprise value? Yes. Because there's somebody out there. The one thing about enterprise value, remember guys, you're always factoring in the fact that everybody thinks they've got a smarter idea. So I'm glad to have the Nutranil in the arsenal, because there's some guy that's going to look at us at some point and say, gee, I know what to do with that, and they'll bid a much higher price for it. So stay tuned, we'll see what happens. But I'm not hanging my hat on Nutranil.
Okay. And then just one more. This is on the shipping. You mentioned in the 10Q that you know the increase in shipping had something to do with the product mix. But like if you look at just the 6 months with just that ended compared to the same six months a year ago, you know, even though revenues are down, the shipping is doubled. It seems that you know product mix is you know it isn't the whole story there.
Well, let me direct that to Doug because he's living that battle every day. But let me compliment you on the fact that you're looking closely enough to notice that, because it is a critical issue. Doug, what's your challenge?
Well, we were well aware transitioning away from the Emerson Group, who was giving a consolidated shipping cost for all of our outgoing freight. That's part of losing your identity in the marketplace, because all the orders ship out under Emerson's name, and he can give you a fantastic consolidated shipping rate. And we had budgeted that with the savings on the side of inbound freight offset and also the warehouse costs, where he's not doing such a nice job and charging you four times the industry standard on picking and packing that pallet. So net-net, it should have washed out to $100,000 positive on our operations side for inbound, outbound, pick and pack for our orders. Where we got off track this year is with our blend of products going to Walmart. Walmart in our new warehouse is a blended outbound rate. The non-Walmart items that ship are 700% more expensive to ship out the door, non-consolidated freight rates. So you can see how very quickly by the Walmart business dipping, it can have a pretty dramatic effect on our overall profitability. But to compare it to last year, they're not apples to apples. They're apples to oranges. And we were fully prepared and vetted that in all of our due diligence that we did when we moved away from Emerson. But where we got non-profitable on the outbound freight was when the blend of the sales has gone off track with the Walmart business. So two things are happening on that front. One is I'm looking for a 3PL solution that's a little more cost effective for us. And we're also looking to bring a potential other one of our major customers who's become very active in the outbound blended freight business and co-packing orders. We're hoping to bring them on board so we'd have two of our major retailers taking co-packed freight. And I'm hoping to make those things happen in 19, but cannot make an announcement on the because they're not factual yet. But very much has our attention, and operationally it's one of my number one going issues that I'm working with my team to fix.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And hey, everybody there, thank you very much for, you know, providing all the information on the conference calls. And
you bet.
Be listening next quarter. Thank you.
Pleasure.
We have no further questions at this time.
Thanks a lot, man. Thanks for calling in, guys. Talk to you later.
This concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect.